Let's say you are dissatisfied with your property tax bill. Who are you going to call? From SDPB, today is Wednesday, April 9th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, journalist Patrick Lally says the state isn't helping residents in Sioux Falls with property tax reform ideas. If you don't like the assessment or the tax bill, he says it might be best to look closer to home for relief. We luxuriate in the nuances of property taxes later in the hour. But first, a history lesson on prison projects and the latest on a new prison proposal. SDPB's Lee Struminger has that story. Plus, no pipeline, no plant. Jackson Dirks checks in with a massive economic growth opportunity hanging in the balance after legislators put up guardrails on how a pipeline could proceed. That's coming after the news. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's check in with SDPB reporters who are following some of the state's largest projects. In a few minutes, Lee Struminger reports on the state prison. But first, Jackson Dirks has an update on what former Governor Kristi Noem called the largest economic investment in South Dakota history. The future of that investment is now in question. Dirks spoke with the CEO of Gevo last week. The company proposed building a billion-dollar corn-based jet fuel plant near Lake Preston. Gruber said Gevo is looking at other sites after legislators passed restrictions on how the pipeline could be approved. Jackson Dirks joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. What have you been working on this week?
Yeah, so I actually have a story out that I did last week about Gevo. That's a company that's looking to build a billion-dollar project in Lake Preston, and it's going to turn sustainable aviation fuel. So it's going to take corn and other things, and it has zero carbon emissions.
Yeah, so many of us remember this from Governor Kristi Noem's one of her State of the State addresses, where she was like, can you believe they're going to turn corn into jet fuel?
Gevo's Net Zero One site in Lake Preston is the first ever billion-dollar investment in South Dakota. They will literally turn corn into jet fuel, as impossible as that sounds.
According to her office, this is the biggest economic investment in South Dakota history, potentially.
Yes.
So now that you remember what we're talking about, where is it at today?
Yeah, so it, like you said, it's one of the biggest economic development projects in state history. So I talked to the CEO because they were basically just announcing they're raising funds, $800 million they're raising funds in a separate special purpose vehicle, so just another company. It's just a business practice. And I was like interested because definitely the pipeline would have an effect on it. So I asked their CEO about that. And boy, does it have an effect on it. He said, if there is no Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline, there is no plant in Lake Preston, which is pretty big news.
Wow. Yeah, that is a big deal. So remind people then what happened this legislative session that might put the Summit Carbon pipeline at risk. Mm-hmm. That project is at risk, directly tied to our legislative session. How?
Yeah, so there was a bill, HB 1052. It was a pretty hot bill. Very contested, a lot of emotions around it. And essentially what HB 1052 did is it said that you cannot use eminent domain for a carbon oxide pipeline. It's a short bill, but it had a lot of implications. So for Summit, who was hoping to use eminent domain under the common carrier status, they have paused their application right now and are kind of looking at what's next because it's a lot harder to get a pipeline project without eminent domain. Especially with this one where it's been pretty hotly contested and very emotional for a lot of landowners.
Yeah. So what's Gevo saying? Will they not build? Will they build somewhere else? Mm-hmm. What are they thinking?
So the main reason Gevo said that they would be willing to look somewhere else is because they need a certain carbon score. So they need all of the carbon output to be below a certain number for a loan they're getting through the Department of Energy. So that's about $1.5 billion loan from the federal government. So that's a lot of money and what they would need to get this big project running. So without carbon sequestration, they would not be eligible for that loan because their carbon score wouldn't be low enough, is what CEO Patrick Gruber told me. And essentially, what he said is there are other avenues that will be cheaper, essentially. I mean, if there is no pipeline, they lose that carbon sequestration, and that's that whole loan with it. So they just recently bought a plant, an ethanol plant in North Dakota, and he said that's a very real possibility. If there is no pipeline through here, they would go there in a heartbeat.
Now, we don't know for sure there's not going to be a pipeline, that Summit Carbon will not proceed. Mm-hmm. We just don't know that yet. How long is a company like Gevo, what's their timeline? If it happens next year, if it happens 5 years from now, when do they say, we're pulling the plug on South Dakota altogether? Did you get an idea?
Exactly. He wasn't very clear about how long. It sounds like he's willing to be patient, 100%. He wants to see it through. Lake Preston has a lot of good sustainable practices in the farmers there, which would help that carbon score get lower. Mm-hmm. So Gruber said he's very interested in Lake Preston, and he loves the people there. He loves South Dakota. It's just without that pipeline, he said it's not possible to get that carbon score low enough. So the timeline, it sounds like he's just willing to wait it out with how long Summit is willing to wait it out and look through the avenues. He more just said straight up, they will leave if there is no pipeline.
Yeah, no pipeline, no project.
Yep, no pipeline, no plant.
No pipeline, no plant. That was a great, is a great lead, sdpb.org/news. You can find Jackson's reporting on that. And then just before we wrap up, what does this mean for other projects in the state, if anything?
Patrick Gruber was very adamant that South Dakota has a quote, black eye on Wall Street right now because of HB 1052. He said a lot of projects and a lot of businesses are pretty mad about this because it changed the rules in the middle of the game. I talked to Governor Roden, and he said when he spoke with Poet, they were disappointed. He didn't say necessarily those strong of words as Gevo did, but he said they were disappointed in what it meant for business. Obviously, that would have helped them with their ethanol plants. So the future is definitely depends who you talk to. Mm-hmm. Some lawmakers say, I mean, they don't want to do business with people who are going to push around their people. I have a story where some lawmakers are saying that, but then others say, well, we want to be open for business. We want businesses to come here. South Dakota is a business-friendly state. That's what Governor Roden said. That's what he's on a tour right now for, an economic opportunity tour. So it just depends who you talk to, but certainly Gevo does not think that South Dakota is very business-friendly right now, and I would assume Summit believes the same.
That's SDPB's Jackson Dirks. You can find his full reporting on the uncertainty of the proposed Gevo plant online at sdpb.org/news. We turn now to SDPB's Lee Strubinger. He brings an update on the state's tumultuous prison project. In about 10 minutes, you'll hear Representative Linda Duba and Senator Gene Hunhoff discuss the history of prison projects in the state. But first, here's Strubinger with a prison project update. He joined me from SDPB's Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City.
Basically, they had their first, I'll say meeting, but they met for 2 days, one where they kind of toured the current men's prison and then the proposed site that has kind of been a consternation within the public and with some lawmakers who are concerned about that effort that was moving forward. And then they had like a full day of testimony the day after, both from the Department of Corrections and the public. So lawmakers are basically, that was kind of considered a fact-finding meeting, if you will, those 2 days. Next, what they're going to end up doing is they're going to meet in Springfield and tour the Mike Durfee prison campus area, just to kind of see how that place is also operating.
All right. So some of the key takeaways, what were lawmakers experiencing? What did they tell you about their impressions thus far?
The impressions are kind of similar to what Governor Larry Roden has been saying for quite some time, that the men's prison, it's old, it's crumbling, it's gothic, it's dark inside, and that something needs to be done. And that something that needs to be done is kind of what they're trying to figure out right now. And so right now there are just a lot of ideas circulating to try and figure out what to do about this issue, which the main issue is, again, the older prison housing, some of the higher classifications of inmates that the state has in prison, while also needing to address an overcrowding issue. That current prison is operating at like 182% capacity. So it's very full.
Okay, so you have the building itself, the fact that it's in places falling down. You have the capacity issue. What else? What are some of their other goals that they're trying to think about or accomplish here?
Well, I don't know if it, I mean, obviously another one of the goals would be safety for state employees as well. But, you know, there's a lot of concern, too, just about the state's recidivism rate. And people who wind up in the state penitentiary system, about 40%, I believe, is kind of the rough number, end up actually coming back into the state's prison system. And that could be for a variety of reasons. Some testimony and data that's out there shows that Texas has about a 20% recidivism rate. And that's something that the state is really wanting to, or lawmakers in the state are looking to kind of dive in deeper and try to understand more. And, you know, one of the things that, or one of the hopes with like a new prison, in addition to getting more capacity, is to really kind of shift the Department of Corrections into kind of modern day, what they're calling like kind of modern day corrections, which is you know, programming to get people on their feet and actually, you know, correct the misbehavior, if you will, that they wound up in prison in the first place.
All right. You talked to John Hansen. Tell me a little bit about his impressions, because that ties into this idea of recidivism and what people need to stay out of a state penitentiary.
Yeah, I caught him after the first meeting on last Thursday and just kind of asked his sort of general impressions and thoughts after this first task force meeting. And here's what he had to say.
The Old Hill is a dark place, and it's probably not the best way to be housing human beings anymore. At the same time, I think the most compelling testimony that I heard to get to the root of the incarceration problem is that people need church, family, and a purpose beyond themselves.
Representative John Hansen there, sounding moved.
Yeah,
I would say, I guess, the tour impacted him, is impacting these lawmakers. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And I think that's part of the reason why Governor Larry Roden put, you know, John Hansen, who is Speaker of the South Dakota House, on this particular task force panel. He was a part of a large group of, let's say, the new kind of Republican majority in the state capitol, who it was very concerned about the kind of prison project that was moving forward under Kristi Noem's administration. And so the challenge that Governor Larry Roden has is getting that kind of legislative support. So that's part of the reason why a lot of lawmakers who are concerned about it are on this task force.
How are they thinking about the future?
That's a really large question, because again, it kind of comes back to the sort of shift in the perspective on what corrections needs to be in South Dakota, how to reduce that recidivism. Another thing that the state and state lawmakers have kind of tasked themselves with is building a building, facility, campus, whatever you want to call it, that will last 100 years from now. The current prison that the state is operating is 144 years old. I think lawmakers and state officials really pride themselves on being very fiscally conservative and very fiscally prudent. And they want to see what will be probably the largest capital expenditure in state history. They want to see that, you know, make it those 100 years.
Yeah. All right. Four meetings, though. There was a lot of hope that this prison project would go forward last legislative session or earlier this year. It did not. Are four meetings enough to move this project forward in a meaningful way?
I asked Lieutenant Governor Tony Van Huysen, who is the chair of this this task force that same question, because they do have a deadline of July 22nd, which would be when the special session to vote on a proposal would be. And again, I asked Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen if four meetings would be enough, and here's what he had to say.
Are four meetings enough for such a big price point and topic?
I don't know yet. I hope so.
Okay, that deadline again was what?
July 22nd.
July 22nd. When's the next meeting?
The next meeting is going to be at the end of April, on April 29th. That's a Tuesday. It's going to be held in Springfield. And then the next meeting after that is going to be June 3rd in Pierre. Those next two meetings are pretty crucial because lawmakers and the state have kind of put out a request from interested landowners to see if anybody's interested in selling them land, which they're kind of looking for about 160 acres, currently anyways, to build this new facility on. So they kind of have put out a request, say, hey, if you're interested, reach out to us. They're hoping to hear from some folks by that next meeting on April 29th. The June 3rd meeting in Pierre will be crucial because the state has contracted with another group to sort of assess what the state's corrections needs are, and they're hoping to get that report by the June 3rd meeting, and that will really kind of help them sort of level set in terms of what other options might be sort of moving forward. And then the last meeting is going to be on July 8th in Sioux Falls.
That's SDPB's Lee Strubinger. Find more news coverage online at sdpb.org/news. Or stick around and listen to SDPB Radio to hear updates throughout the day. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. As lawmakers strive to move the state prison project forward, let's look back at the history of these projects in South Dakota. We asked former State Senator Gene Hunhoff and Representative Linda Duba for context. I'm thinking of Governor Roden and the prison project reset and what needs to happen going forward. And maybe we'll start with Representative Duba this time and then bring Senator Hunhoff into the conversation. Is this a leadership test for him to say, like, all this water has gone under the bridge with what the prison project should be? I'm hitting reset. I'm gathering 22 people with more public input around the table. We're asking ourselves these three important questions. Do we need a new prison? Where should it be? How big should it be? And where should it be at? Pretty much everybody agrees that we need a new prison. That's an obvious yes.
Not everybody. We have a few that still think
a few holdouts
that we can, you know, fix the one we've got.
Patch the walls. Okay, fair. Yeah. Not everybody agrees that. What do you think of this as a test of his leadership ability, Linda?
To be perfectly honest with you, I understand why they did it. It's very disappointing. As a member of the Appropriations Committee and the prison study, to now, I guess it'll be almost 3 years ago now, we were very open and public about all of it, and we had numerous hearings. And so what we've seen now is a group of individuals who are balking at what the plan is. And I truly believe it's not just the cost that's driving this. It's where it's located. It's become a political football. But did the governor have any choice? Well, they couldn't pass the bill. So what else are you going to do? So they're starting on, I believe, the 2nd of April. I think they've got 2 days of meetings here in Sioux Falls. I'm trying to decide if I want to go show up at one of those meetings, and I might. Because I invested a lot of my time and energy in those decisions along with Senator Hunhoff. Do they have a choice? No, because right now there's, quite frankly, misinformation out there. Yeah. So we need several people that have fresh sets of eyes. There are some holdovers on that group, but most of these people coming in, fresh set of eyes, and now they're going to be in the seats that we were in. And I really hope that they walk in there with an open mind and understand what is looking us in the face.
Will they all have the same facts? Can we agree on that anymore? Because I think it's in the executive order. He actually writes that there is a process to make sure they're all working off the same information.
You have to work off the same information, but there still will be open public testimony.
Sure.
And we still have individuals out there who like to provide misinformation. And so you can choose to hear it and ignore it or believe it. There will be a lot going on behind the scenes. I got to trust the committee that they're going to do their job, but there's going to be a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Senator Hunhoff, your thoughts on what Governor Roden has in front of him here and how he's proceeding?
Well, I would agree with Representative Duba. He's where he's at right now with, I guess, the consequences that have come out. But I will go back to, you know, we spent 2 years. We certainly heard the consultant. We heard other individuals. We listened to everything. We tried to identify. We've been to the prison. I've been there every year that I've been on appropriations and have seen the conditions there. And it was not like we did this in a very overnight fashion and just projected. You know, some of the same individuals that are questioning the size of the facility need to look at the laws we keep passing every year that are felonies that are requiring institutionalization. Mm-hmm. Our numbers continue to escalate. Now, nothing was discussed about, they did talk about a little bit about parole or whatever, but again, it's a one shot, one project, not a looking at the whole system. I think the other thing is, this is change, and change has stages that it goes through. And I've lived through two of those. So when former Governor Jenkel walked into Springfield with security and told the people there, we're closing the college and it's going to become a prison, believe me, that was a very tense moment in my life as to how all those people in that community were reacting. What happened? It went on. It became a prison. And now the community embraces it because it's economic development. Fast forward a few years, Yankton College. That was just the epitome of our community in Yankton, right in the middle of a very old, historic Yankton, the founding area and everything. The people, again, they reacted. We can't have this here. We had issues. We had all kinds of narratives going on about the bad things that would happen. That is now a very beautiful campus. We have not had incidences. It's one that, because of the level of those prisoners, doesn't require barricades or fences around. They live across the street from the facility. It brought economic development to this community. It brought a beautiful resurrected campus, even though it's a federal prison. It brought people, it brought jobs, and it stimulated the economy. But it had to go through stages. And I would agree with Representative Duba in the sense that this is a change, and people are, you know, certainly the unknown, and they give examples or whatever, what could happen. I have to remind myself. So when I was sitting on the property tax summer study, people from that area did come in and they were talking about their property and what the level that their taxes were rising so high and the sale of the property and everything. When we had anything about the prison and those individuals that were living in those communities came in, they would come and do their presentation as to why they raised concerns and certainly valid issues or concerns. But one of them that they expressed that it would devalue their property assessments and they didn't want to see that done. So I'm thinking here, okay, both sides of the street here, where's the win for anybody living there? Because it's either devalue if I have a prison there, or if I don't, then I need property tax relief because it's so high. Again, I think it's stages, and I think the unintended consequences in the future, if the state decides to do something with any kind of facility or a capital asset and put it outside in a community or whatever, if the people rally that this isn't the right thing to do, the precedent has been set. We've already, you know, if that location is changed, we've already done that. Will that then create other scenarios out there that'll be more difficult for the state to do anything outside of Pierre if it's necessary to do?
Here's the roadmap.
And the thing that is so difficult with this is that we're stewards of the taxpayers' dollars.
Yeah.
And we have watched this and looked at this so closely throughout the 2 to 3 years that we worked on this. And now, because of the reset, we stand to cost ourselves $40 million minimum and possibly up to $100 million more dollars. And everyone calls it the billion-dollar prison. Well, we weren't there yet, but we're going to get there very quickly. I talk to a lot of the folks that have, some have homes around there, some do not. It's just, it's an interesting situation. Now, I personally live within a mile of the current prison, and I have no concerns. I understand that they built their dream homes and it's out, but we took care as we were working with the Secretary of Corrections about making that aesthetic so that you wouldn't know what was behind the rows and rows of trees. So it's not like you're going to look out your back window and, you know, 600 feet away, there are prisoners out there looking at you. That is not a true statement, but that is what is being sold to the public. And it's unfortunate. I believe when all is said and done, they're going to come back and they're going to say, this was a solid proposal. Maybe they won't have 1,500 beds, but as Senator Hunhoff has pointed out, we continue to change our statutes so we can lock more people up. So if we really wanted to do change, the prison is operationally how we support folks and how we get them the education they need. Over here, we should have a concurrent thing going on with justice reform. That is important. We need to take a serious look at that. But I don't know if we've got the stomach for it in this state.
Former state legislators Jean Hunhoff and Linda Duba offer analysis as part of SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies commentary. You can find more state politics conversations on your favorite podcast platform. Search and subscribe to SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies. After a short break, Patrick Lally has something to say about property taxes, especially in the state's largest city. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, you heard our Dakota Political Junkies analysis of Governor Larry Roden's property tax proposal. Today, we are welcoming another analyst to the program to dig into the politics of property taxes. Patrick Lally is the editor of Sioux Falls Live. He joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls Live, you're writing more about property taxes, specifically about the nuances of property taxes in Sioux Falls. So we talked about property taxes last week on the Dakota Political Junkies. You're going to provide a slightly different perspective. Why is this sticking with you as something that needs to be ferreted out?
Well, what first got my attention, and I listened to that segment, and it was very informative. There were some things in there that I'm not sure were exactly, it was old. It was history from the Janklow years and everything else. But when I hear them say, when I hear the legislators and the governor say that we have to do something about property taxes, and this time it's because of Sioux Falls and the Black Hills, it just got me curious because I live in one of the, I live in Southeast Sioux Falls, and that's always one of the places where they say, you know, taxes are going up. That's one of the growth areas. And it's true, the valuation of my house has gone up, well, we were stuck since 2017, as I said in the column, they've gone up, my valuation has gone up $100,000. My tax has gone up about $1,000 mm-hmm. per year. And I look at that from 2017 and I think, that's a long time ago. Yeah, my taxes are more and I don't want to pay them, but am I revolting over that? And the answer is no. That's not something that I'm going to go and talk to my legislator about. I think there are other things, right? So I start looking at just sampling because it is, I will say this, it is very difficult to pull together data on property taxes because it is
in Sioux Falls.
Mm-hmm. And anywhere, it's very complicated because you immediately have three entities that are not the state, which are the county, the city, and the school district. Mm-hmm. And of those, the school district takes the biggest chunk because they've got no other way to fund, right?
And just for people who don't live in Sioux Falls,
yes.
Just because you live in Sioux Falls doesn't mean you're in the Sioux Falls School District. It doesn't mean you're in Minnehaha County. You could live. There's different examples.
Yep. And I write about that in the column, and I think it is very instructive because people don't know necessarily where they live. I mean, people move here.
That's your tweet of the day. People don't know necessarily where they live. Come on.
Well, yes, it's shocking. People move to Sioux Falls and don't realize they moved into Lincoln County, and they got to drive to Canton to get their license plates or whatever. But you can live in Lincoln County, Harrisburg School District, and the city of Sioux Falls.
Yeah.
You can live in the city of Sioux Falls, the Brandon School District, and Minnehaha County. I mean, there's all these different combinations. T area, you can live in Sioux Falls, T area, and Lincoln County. And all of those different entities have a different demand on your property taxes. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's all based on the mill levy, which is gets very confusing. But that is just, well, all that means is every $1 per $1,000. That's the mill levy. But what happens is, if you have a school district like Harrisburg, for instance, which is growing like crazy, or T area, which is growing like crazy, even Lenox, these suburban school districts where they're just expanding, their total property goes up, the value of their property, sure. But if you're Harrisburg, you've had to build multiple schools mm-hmm. in a short period of time. The demands on the property taxes are going to be much higher. And as I write in the column, what do you expect them to do? Build Quonset huts? Like, they're building a future education system. The demand on your property taxes is right now. Mm-hmm. But you're paying for something for 30, 40 years. And that can be hard. Mm-hmm. I get that's a pressure on your taxes. But if that's the problem, if that's where the pressure is coming from, that's not a tax revolt.
Right.
That's something different. And I guess my real issue here is when the state gets involved, and why I wrote the column, is that they are imposing from peer something that may not work for everybody in Sioux Falls. And so you've got a problem, but what you're doing is coming in and just blanket trying to change something that I think it's going to cause more problems than it's ever going to solve. It's going to cause a problem for more people and the future of the community, the future of our education systems, not just Sioux Falls, but Harrisburg, all those different places. And we have these huge challenges in Sioux Falls, and this is what the legislature is concerned about. They're not solving anything for Sioux Falls with what they did, certainly what they did now, which is so tiny and piecemeal. But the governor said he's coming back with more plans. I don't know where this pressure is really coming from. And okay. And if this is the solution, I don't see it solving the problem that may exist.
Okay. What don't you like about the plans? One of the questions we have is, where is the pressure really coming from?
Yep.
We're going to talk more about that in a minute from an educational standpoint. But the governor's proposed half-penny sales tax, counties can opt in or opt out. Why don't you like that for the city of Sioux Falls, where most of your coverage is?
Well, first of all, we're over two counties. The city of Sioux Falls is in two counties, and mm-hmm. increasing proportion of our population is in Lincoln County. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. You pay it in Lincoln County, you don't pay it in Minnehaha County, or, you know, you pay it at the grocery store. There's a Get and Go at 57th and Cliff that's on the north side of 57th Street. If you go there, you pay a half penny more than if you go across the street to the Hy-Vee. You know what I mean? That doesn't make any sense.
If one county opts in.
Right.
The other
or the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, I think, to the larger point, is that over 30% of the households in the city of Sioux Falls, that's in the city limits, are not owner-occupied, which means they will get no benefit from any property tax.
Their rentals.
Break. Yeah. Their rentals. And what the governor is saying is, I'll give you counties this half a penny of sales tax, but you have to apply that directly to reducing the property tax bill.
Right.
So in Sioux Falls, that roughly it was like estimated at $950 a year that my property taxes would go down, which is great. But if that happens, I'm also paying a half cent more in sales tax in a four-person and two-cat household that is which is deeply involved in the taxable economy, if you know what I'm saying. And so, probably we won't pay $957 more in sales tax, but we'll pay something. And so what am I really getting? That's an illusion. That's a shell game. That's all that is.
And it doesn't help the renters.
It doesn't help the renters, yeah. Which is a...
So Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen, when I asked him that, he said, well, it might help a renter get into a house because I've just made the house more affordable for you. You say what?
Oh, man, I would think that would be so far on the margins as to be inconsequential, because that's not going to appreciably change somebody's purchasing power in terms of buying a house in the community of Sioux Falls. And the other part of that is, I won't say all of them, because clearly there are a lot of renters who are not below the poverty level, but a lot of them are. So what you're doing is imposing another half cent sales tax on the people who can afford it the least, mm-hmm. to pay somebody who, according to my theory, which is, pretty theoretical right now, is people who are upset are people in upper middle class households, which are feeling the pressure. I'm not saying they aren't, but they are. They do have a better ability to pay that than somebody who's living in a rental house just off the Whittier or in the Whittier neighborhood, let's say, or even around the colleges or around the, you know, I've been writing a lot about the property owned by Sanford. They own 200 or so properties around their campus clustered together. That's all rental. So all of those people, none of those people are going to get a break. And the hospital system isn't going to get a break because they're not owner-occupied.
Their taxes go up.
Yeah. So I don't think.
But the governor's office would say, well, you have the choice. I mean, we're not coming in and telling you to do it.
No.
Don't do it. And then if you have a problem, talk to your county officials.
And I would say.
The state is just offering you tools for your toolkit, Patrick.
Yep. And I think you're giving with one hand and taking with the other, and I don't think it's going to do anything appreciable, and it's not solving the problem. It's not really solving the problem. The problem is that school districts have demands that they have to meet.
So your problem, you're defining a different problem than what they're defining.
Yep.
The problem they're defining is that they're getting phone calls from constituents who say, I cannot afford my property tax bill.
Yep.
The problem you're defining is that schools are underfunded.
Well, partly. And if you have a problem with your property tax bill, go to the people who are charging you the property tax.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because let's take a pause for this educational component. Because you and I have talked about this extensively. And the theory is a lot of people don't understand their own property tax bill until it becomes a problem for them.
Right.
You can call your director of equalization.
Which you did.
Which I did this morning. Yeah. And they walked me through everything. And I learned more in 10 minutes on the phone with them about my personal property tax bill than I've ever known in the 25 years of owning my home. So there are people there who are going to help you.
Yes.
Understand this.
And that's all online, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you are savvy, you can dig into it.
I went with the pretend I'm not savvy, and I only have 15 minutes because you were coming in.
Yeah.
No, so I think that's... And I thought I need to know what it's like to make a phone call. And so I did. So you get these assessments in the beginning of the year. You can call and speak to and ask to speak to really the assessor, the person who came and walked outside your house and said, and they will explain to you why they made the assessment judgment that they made. Now, I'm not saying that they have time for coffee with every single person. I'm not saying that. However, if you have questions, if you have problems, and they can also walk you through and help you understand the state programs that already exist.
Yes.
So we've been talking a lot about senior citizens.
Right.
And if you are a senior citizen and you say you've paid off your house and now you're looking at a tax bill that you can't afford, there are programs to help you if you qualify.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's property tax caps, freezes for senior citizens. And that's legit.
Yeah. If you are a complete and total disabled veteran.
Yes.
Some veterans qualify for a freeze in their property taxes. Owner-occupied is a 20% reduction in property taxes, which I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you are owner-occupied, you're getting a reduction in your taxes. And you would have had to fill out paperwork to get that. So it's written on your assessment. If you look at that piece of paper, it will tell you whether or not you have that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also call.
Yes.
And you can say, am I taking advantage of all the programs that already exist?
Right. And that's just the state stuff. There are other city programs.
Mm-hmm.
The city has a lot of different, not just property tax stuff, but helping you fix up your home. And there's a lot of money out there for people who can't afford these things to maintain the housing stock. And people just don't take advantage of it for a lot of reasons. But if you're going to be mad about your property taxes, which you can be, you're allowed to be, find out why.
Yeah.
And that's what you did. And what did you learn about your house?
Yeah. And I learned my property taxes went up $500 since 2017, which doesn't seem to me to be my personal life something I'm losing sleep over. That seems reasonable to me because my house has also gone up in value by quite a bit.
Yep. And I think people do kind of freak out when they see the valuations, right? So you get
that. I think
that's
key.
Yeah.
When you get that piece of paper and I bought this house for $75,000 and now someone's telling me it's worth more than $200,000, there is something in you that goes, what? We should be like, yay, look at our investment.
You've built wealth.
Except if you're not, I've built wealth, but I'm not going to move because I could not afford to move anywhere else.
No, but that is.
But if I died
right,
and we sold the house, I would pass that inheritance onto my child. So yeah. it's part of your investment package if you're a homeowner.
And when you retire, right? I mean, this is how America has built generational wealth for generations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all know people who have taken that generational wealth from their family farmland and cashed that in and gone on to other things in their life because they weren't going to be farmers,
right?
That is generational wealth, and it's real. Now, so are taxes.
And you have to pay your fair share of taxes.
You have to. I don't...
But we're South Dakotans, so we don't pay too many taxes. We like to have a very, very low tax burden.
Right. And it comes at a time when we have just endured inflationary pressure, right, in the broader economy. So we're all paying more for things anyway.
And spoiler alert.
It's more common. Yeah, I mean, that's just the reality. Yeah. I don't want to argue. And it is everything. Mm-hmm. And that existed before the tariff discussion. We all know that. And, you know, the price of eggs are going up not because of tariffs, but because of bird flu.
So we feel a lot of pressure, which goes back to this question, is where is the pressure coming from, really?
Yep.
And one has to wonder if just all of us feeling the pressure of what it means to afford, I mean, if you have kids right now, my mm-hmm. daughter's flown and grown, so the pressures on me are much less. But when you have those pressures, that you might call your legislator.
You might. Or
and
if
you might say, my property tax bill has gone up again. Do something about it.
And I just don't think the state, when we have tried to do this in the past, it has not worked. I know when Jean Hunoff was here on your show last week, she was talking about Janklow, and I only bring up Jean because...
amazing history lesson. Go back and listen to the Junkies podcast if you want to hear the full history lesson. She knows.
Yep, and we went through what back then was a huge tax revolt, and that's when we got the tax caps, property tax freezes, and there was a lot of pain that went with that, and now... It still exists. The county has opted out a couple of times. The Sugul District has opted out for different things.
Of the freeze,
yeah.
Of the caps,
And now nobody says anything. I mean, there used to be a...
In Rapid City, they do.
Well, sure.
But you're talking about Sioux Falls,
yeah. Yeah, in Sioux Falls, mm-hmm. they don't. Because people are like, well, we need a jail, right? And the state's not going to pay for our jail, so how are we going to pay for a jail? And it turns out we built a great jail. Because it's expandable and we haven't needed to use the whole thing. So the decisions that were made back then to opt out on that have paid off, mm-hmm. right? Or the school district had to build a new high school and some new elementary schools, and we don't have the growth pressure that the suburbs do, but it's still there. And so if you have a problem with your taxes, go to the people who are charging you the taxes, mm-hmm. which is your school district, your county, and your city. And
are we calling them suburbs now?
I am. I call them suburbs because
send your emails to Patrick Lally at Sioux Falls Live.
when they're all overlapping like this, we have seven school districts in the city of Sioux Falls.
Right, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask you at the beginning. This is a statewide radio station. Why does the rest of the state care about a 15-minute conversation about property taxes in Sioux Falls?
They don't, maybe. I don't. I think they should because if this is driving... public policy than they should. The other part of it is that, and the reason I wrote the column to begin with was that the legislature is not doing things for Sioux Falls that they should do. The best example of that is the airport, and this is why everybody should care. The Sioux Falls Airport Authority has never taken money from the city or the state until last year. They took $2 million. They built a $67 million parking ramp. No public money, paid for by out of their money. No borrowing. They borrowed
not
a tiny
for nothing.
Bit.
That's a nice parking ramp.
It's a beautiful parking ramp.
It would never say.
No.
I don't know the nuances of how much it costs, but I'll tell you what. That is a well navigable, safe, and
out of the elements.
Lovely parking ramp at
it's
the
great.
Sioux Falls Airport.
It's really nice. And
didn't think that sentence would come out of my mouth. Gosh, you guys built a good ramp.
Well, and the Airport Authority is an amazing entity that has paid for it their own way forever.
Oh.
They haven't borrowed money. They haven't taken public money. They've just done it. Well, now we need some serious growth. we need to go from 5 or 7 gates to 12 gates, I think is what it is, and expand the concourse and do for the future so that we have flights out of here. So because if we don't, because the demand is going up and up and up and up because there's more people here, the prices for your flight is going to go up if there aren't more options, and you can't have more options without more gates. So the airport authority was asking for a little bit of money, like maybe $5-10 million. Just throw us a bone here on a $108 million expansion. And it was, nah, go pound sand. Now, the city's probably going to do it.
And so the argument you're making in this column is if the state of South Dakota wants to help Sioux Falls, it should be in the areas like that of economic development and maybe not in some of these areas. In your opinion, it's not really helping.
Right. And that was the mayor's point way back. And he has recently been, not to me, but he's been more vocal about this after this last session. Well, it's like you didn't do, even the Sioux Falls legislators apparently voted against this money for the airport, which is just, I can't imagine a better economic development investment than the Sioux Falls Regional Airport and Rapid. I mean, 65% of the flights out of South Dakota come from through Sioux Falls. It's almost all of East River, which makes sense. That's where the people are. Meanwhile, the federal government is still propping up Pier and Watertown with Essential Air. That'll go away pretty soon. And so there won't be any flights out of Pier and Watertown. I can't imagine that when we're cutting everything else, we're not going to cut Essential Air funding to small towns in America. But
to be determined.
Stay
tuned.
Yeah. That's speculative on the highest level.
Yeah.
But just to the point is that we need this airport and we need it to be bigger. Every business that comes in, we're not going to get more jobs and bigger businesses coming in here if you can't fly in and out at a reasonable cost. And just think about your winter vacation to Florida or wherever. If we don't expand the airport, all of that's going up as much as it's going to go up already. And you won't have the options and the flights will be full and everything else. We're trying to get direct flights to Washington, D.C. or New York City or Houston. Can't do it without an expansion. Maybe. But not like we can if we have the expansion of the airport. Yeah. So all those things together, like you pull it all together, and I get very upset about the legislature because they're not doing the things for Sioux Falls that they should, and they're doing things that I don't think really matter. And I mean, take all the social stuff out of it, just economics. I just got a press release the other day from state. This is an infrastructure funding, $104 million in infrastructure funding. For probably worthy water projects and all this different. I mean, how much do we spend on FreedomWorks here? For what? How about you invest that in one of the greatest economic development tools we have, which is a robust option for air travel?
That's Patrick Lally, editor and reporter with Sioux Falls Live. You can find more of his reporting online at SiouxFallsLive.com. We'll also put some links up on our website, sdpb.org, after the show. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.